CliffCentral.com.
Like that. That's Len with Steal My Sunshine. Happy little song for a Wednesday morning. It's the 20th of January. If you are up and about and you're getting things done this morning, we are live. We're here to look after you today. We're going to talk to some interesting people along the way. Damon is part of the show this morning. C.S. Angweni. I'm Gareth Cliff. Good morning. So, I suppose a lot of people have started, and maybe more than ever in 2020, started their own podcasts. I just want you to cast your mind back to like 2014 when we started, because we're turning seven this year. And podcasts weren't a big deal at all. Now, I've been a podcast listener for years, so I used to listen to podcasts probably in the late 2000s already. And I've always loved them because to me, there's something both really convenient, like fast food, consumerish about podcasts. You can listen when you want to, do it when you like. And it's growing in leaps and bounds all over the world. In fact, I've noticed that, you know, important people are starting their own podcasts, or they're going on other people's podcasts to get things done. It's been a huge part of political campaigns, PR and marketing campaigns all over the world. And it's really something to think about. But the best part about podcasting is you can do your own. And it might be a huge disaster. It might flop completely. It might not work. You might not be consistent about it. You might forget to do an episode. And then your audience kind of give up on you. But if you do it professionally and if you do it consistently, it's a really cool thing to get done and to add to your list of goals, achievements, or, you know, hobbies, even if that's what it is. A lot of people
can
are doing
ask a question.
Sure.
Because this is one of the most important things, Gareth. One podcast listener represents how many radio listeners, in your opinion? What do you think that equation is? Because don't you think that's such the most powerful thing about podcasts?
Well, I suppose it's more about the quality of the engagement that you get with a podcast listener, because they have to do a few more things than a radio listener would.
Exactly.
But they also are more connected to what you're doing than a radio listener ever could be. You know, usually people who listen to radio just hop in the car and whatever's on, they listen to.
Isn't that the main strength? That's the main strength of podcasts,
well,
right?
It's one of them, but I mean, one of the things that I love about podcasting is we've got a much, much smarter audience here than we've ever had in radio. And the value that each of our listeners brings to our programs on cliffcentral.com is just in leaps and bounds better than anything we had on radio. I mean, you remember the quality of just callers that we would get on. There were seriously stupid people.
Radio. If I run an advertising agency and I'm selling advertising, is there a formula where you can say one podcast listener represents 10,000 radio listeners?
A lot of people have tried to crack that formula. There's no way that you can actually figure it out, because it's a psychological thing rather than a statistical thing. You know,
it's a quality thing,
certainly
not a quantitative.
Podcast listeners have more money. They are more discerning. They care more about what they're listening to. It's much more of a community than it is just an audience. And you can see that when we bring certain of our partners into this relationship that we have with our listeners. I mean, I read an email last week from somebody who is buying blinds and shutters from Taylor Blinds and Shutters, who sponsor Blind History. And, you know, there's something about that that's so much more meaningful than any kind of 30-second ad we ever used to play on radio. It's a whole different universe. So for the clients, it's different. For the audience, it's different. For me, it's different. And I love it. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because maybe this is the year that you decide to host a podcast, or you've been doing one already. And there might be an opportunity for you, because the BBC World Service, what's one of the oldest broadcast platforms in the world, they're launching the first international podcast competition. And the competition will be open to residents of Nigeria, Kenya, and South Africa. and the winning entry will be turned into a new podcast, hopefully to be launched in 2021. If you want to find out more, we're going to speak to Sharon Machira, who's from Nairobi, and to, it's not Jedi, it's Jed. Jed Ramalapa, who's the editor-in-chief of Sound Africa in South Africa, and they are two of the judges in the competition, and they're going to tell us more about how that works. So they're going to come on in a little while. Is there still a Keeping Up with the Kalvaris? Is that still going?
That's what I want. Okay, that's what I wanted to ask you. Now, Keeping Up with the Kalvaris, it's been off and on 100 times. Like, we've relaunched the show about 5 times now. I started a new, I haven't done a show since April last year.
It's like Barbara Streisand with her farewell tours, and then she starts again and she starts again.
So I decided somebody told me to listen to Bill Burr, and I was trying to do something like Bill Burr does, where he's totally by himself and he just talks totally by himself. So I tried that out. I've done 2 shows recently, and I wanted to ask you, so 111 listeners to the one show and 75 listeners to the second show. Is that good? Is that bad? What is that?
Who knows? I mean, maybe that's good for a podcast that's brand new. I don't think it's terrible, no. but you're not going to be able to retire on, you know, kind of having an audience like that, and you're not going to be able
is
to run a business.
Is it worth persevering? That is the question.
But that depends on you, not on the audience. I mean, if you're doing it as a business, no, then you're never going to make any money.
I've got a high out of it. I'm so excited about it. I've enjoyed it so much. It's like a drug. It's like a drug.
That's a reason
and
to
I
do
wanna,
it.
And I want to just do it and do it and do it. So I'm going to do it for that reason.
Yeah, but that's to make yourself happy. Absolutely. Then do it. I mean, some people can't paint, but they paint because it makes them happy.
And let me ask you, if you think this is normal? I know you're not a psychologist, but since I've been doing these 2 shows, that's all I'm thinking about all the time. It's while I'm pouring perfumes and mix, that's all I'm just thinking about what I'm going to talk about on my show. Is that normal?
But that's where the high comes from, the perfume fumes.
Is that normal? I'm busy thinking about my little podcast all the
time. But Damon, if you really love something, then that's exactly what it does to you. It gives you those highs because you're excited by it. It's a creative endeavor. I just want to read some of these.
I thought I was having a psychiatric episode.
No, I think that's quite normal. In fact, it's quite healthy. It's good to have something like that makes you excited. So here are a few things. Tracy says, I don't miss the brainless ads you used to play on radio. Thank goodness for podcasts. I tune in because I want to. Carl says, I would say the single biggest difference is that a podcast listener is listening on purpose and a radio listener is sometimes listening by mistake. Good point. Brandon says, this is the only podcast I listen to. I also don't listen to any radio at all anymore. Radio is terrible and it's getting worse. I listen to my own music. So there's some interesting feedback. Apparently Jim Jeffries' podcast, which is called I Don't Know About That, apparently that's hysterical. So there's one to listen to if you're looking for something new. So let's speak to Jed. He's already online. And Jed, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are
good,
you?
Good, good. So you're a judge, and I'm great, thank you. You're a judge in the podcast competition. And why don't you tell us what your involvement has been so far, and also tell us what Sound Africa is all about. What do you guys do there?
Thank you, Gareth. Okay, so I was asked by the BBC to be a guest judge on this their first international podcasting competition, because I am the editor-in-chief of Sound Africa. So Sound Africa is a seasonal podcast where we produce sort of in-depth documentary style, sort of journalistic style podcasts on a seasonal basis. So that's what we've been doing for the last 5 years. We've just recently completed a series on One Night in Snake Park, which was looking at the killing of a 14-year-old boy there in 2015. So it's seasons. We just come out maybe once or twice a year, not all the time.
Okay, very, very nice. And how's the podcast been received? I mean, have you had lots and lots of people listening? Has it been taken note of by other media organizations? What's the status there?
You know, we've had a lot of success from outside South Africa. I think more people outside the country know about the podcast. We have been played, I think, by the BBC at times. We've been played somewhere on some radio stations in the US. So we're just right now trying to really get the local South Africans really to tune into the podcast, because a lot of what we produce are stories that are South Africa based but have a resonance in the rest of the world. Like in the past 2 years, we did a documentary on Dulce September in partnership with Open Secrets, kind of retelling the story of her murder. Initially, we were trying to find out who murdered her, but like, you know, it's just a very engaging series and has been one of our most successful so
these
far.
Are these are almost like true crime podcasts, right? I mean, it's that's what it sounds like. It's that's fascinating. I want to go to Sharon quickly and ask Sharon, first of all, welcome Sharon, how are you and how's Nairobi today?
Nairobi is beautiful, and hey you guys, as you can see, the weather is just everything.
It looks fantastic. And you look fantastic. So yeah. Sharon, just tell me quickly what you do and how you got involved in this, because I suppose this is your baby, right?
This is my baby. So how I got involved in this, obviously I work at the BBC, but last year while we were in lockdown, I started a podcast with a bunch of my girlfriends, and it very quickly became the number one podcast in East Africa.
Wow, good. So, good stuff.
Yeah, and you know, the podcast industry here in Kenya is very nascent. It's only just picking up now. And literally, you know, some of my bosses were like, oh my goodness, if you're able to make a podcast that resonates with women and with young people in East Africa, then I've got good news for you. We're going to be launching our BBC podcast competition, and I would love for you to be a judge and join and, you know, spread the word to people across the continent. So that's how I got involved in all of this. It was just a stroke of luck and a little bit of experience.
All right. So tell us, there are lots and lots of people who are going to be thinking, ah, perfect, a competition. This is a great way for my podcast to make it to be more well known, to get a good kickstart over other podcasts, because lots of people are doing them. How does the competition work, and who can enter?
Right. So how it works is as simple as this. So anybody can enter if you're over the age of 18, if you're in Kenya, Nigeria, or South Africa. And the reason it's only open to these markets for now is because, well, it's the first year and we can only do so much, but these are also the biggest markets for BBC audiences in Africa. And so you need to be a resident in these three countries over the age of 18. And here's the interesting one. You can't be a broadcast media professional, right? And that stretches across to content creators. And what I mean by content creators is if you're a vlogger, a YouTuber, podcaster, and you make half of your income on any of this platform. So that's how we basically gauge what our content creator is. And a broadcast professional.
You want amateurs. You don't want professionals. Mm-hmm. You don't want someone who's been doing this for 2-3 years.
Like you technically can't apply because, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
And really the reason is this, so many media professionals in these countries, in Kenya, in Nigeria, and South Africa, our podcasters, and you know, the feeling is that you have a bit of a leg up because you do work in the industry, you understand the technicality, you've got the resources. And so we just want to even up the playing field for your regular Joe or Jack or Jill who's just recording in their bedroom. And that's really the point of having this competition. And, you know, the BBC wants to come in as a bigger brother and just hold your hand in this podcast journey, and that's really the reason why we started this podcast competition.
All right, Jedi, will you tell me quickly what you'd be looking for as a judge? What kinds of content are you most interested in, and what sort of stuff are you excited to hear?
Yeah, I think one of the most exciting things about this competition is we don't know what to expect or what to hear. But what we will hear. But I think for me, what I'll be looking for specifically are stories that resonate with women. I think I heard you talking earlier about, you know, gender-based violence in this country. And I think that it's a problem that's not just in South Africa, it's across the world. So if people can find ways of talking about gender-based violence that are different from the norm and the narrative that we're used to, where it's so polarized, it's like just either you are a feminist or you are a patriarch, you know. So there has to be somewhere in the middle. Like there has to be other stories that exist in the middle. And for me, what also would be important is if the people that are applying can tell me why they should be the one who are doing the podcast. I think as we all are talking here, we know that everybody has a podcast in them or is doing a podcast. Well, so how will your voice and your story stand out from millions of others that are already there? So you have to really be true to yourself and think, do I really know about the subject that I am proposing here? Am I really the right person to tell it? And how will I tell it using sound? Because sound is the medium of podcasting. So you really have to think about how you will engage your audiences and keep them interested for a year or however long your podcast
lasts. Well, it's not a small deal to have the BBC World Service on board for this and hosting this competition, because obviously the BBC World Service has a long history of telling people all over the world what's going on in the world, and they've been preeminent in that space for the longest time. It's like 100 years or something. And really the ability for a podcaster in, you know, some amateur podcaster somewhere in Nigeria or Kenya or South Africa to have the chance to be taken note of by something like the BBC World Service and to have them kickstart your podcast is really incredible. So that's a terrific way of anyone to start, right, Sharon?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think for me, that's truly the most exciting thing, because I remember when I started my podcast last year.
What's your podcast called, by the way? People are asking. They want to subscribe.
Oh, it's called It's Related, I Promise. So it's just taking a nod on how women have conversations that just end up running in all sorts of directions. And you have to sort of butt in and be like, okay, it's related. I promise. Okay. So yeah, feel free to subscribe. And really what's exciting is when we started our podcast, we literally had like 2,000 downloads maximum in a week. Like that was as far as our audience reach could go. And slowly it got up to about 10K per download, which
wow,
in a tiny little industry like this is really big. But, you know, with the BBC, we're looking at an audience of about 341 million across the world.
Huge.
So really your voice is elevated and amplified across the world. And for me as a judge, because I will be a judge on the competition, what I'm particularly looking for is content that really leans towards the continent, that really speaks about issues from the continent, authentically African, authentically ours. Because why did the BBC start this podcast competition in Africa and not in Asia or in the America? We could have done that. We could have just looked to whatever other direction and then done a podcast competition from there. So there's a very strong African or interest in the continent and what is African and what people on the continent are thinking and doing. And so if you're watching this and you're thinking of applying, I think if your content is particularly touching on the continent and issues around the continent, I think you have a better chance of winning. So there's your little hack.
I've got to also just warn anybody who wants to enter that entries close on the 22nd of January. So you've got today and tomorrow, and then that's the last day on the 22nd. And you can go to bbcworldservice.com and /podcast competition, all one word, bbcworldservice.com/podcast competition. Get in there, you know, enter. What the hell? What do you got to lose? I mean, you're going to have, at least you've got nice people like Jedi and Sharon judging this thing. So go ahead and get involved. Start your own podcast. Now's the best time to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. No time like now.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, ladies. A pleasure to see you both, and good luck with the competition. Let us know what happens.
Thank you.
Bye.
Very good. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, Jedi. Very good. Nice to meet them. Oh, I cut Damon off by mistake. Will you get him back, Sia? I cut Damon off. No. By mistake, I cut Damon off.
No.
Anyway.
All right, so I'll get him on now.
That's interesting. Sarah, who listens to us, also lives in Kenya, or lived in Kenya, and she says she's a keen follower of Sharon's podcast. How's that? When is season 2 coming? We've been waiting. Dogozo says Sharon looks amazing. And Steph says, I subscribe to your podcast, Damon, as well as Cliff Central's Keep Going. So lots of comments here about podcasting in general, which is really cool. I mean, I honestly had no idea when we started this stuff that it would be, that our timing would be good and we'd, you know, coincide with the rise of podcasting. And what a year 2020 has been for podcasting all over the world. It's gone through the roof. I think more people are listening to podcasts now than are listening to I think any of those music channels where you kind of just have them play a playlist for you. There are obviously people who are subscribing to their own playlists and so on, but certainly it's on the rise and it's becoming a serious business too. If you can get if you can get enough listeners, you've got a business.
I sort of had to pause there for a moment when you said we're turning 7 this year.
I know.
What?
Mad, huh?
Is that real?
Mad. Absolutely incredible. Yeah.
You know, you think about how so much has changed and how now everyone has a podcast. And it is a good thing, yes, that this industry is growing and whatnot. But
you see, if you'd said to the BBC...
Have a competition like this.
See, if you'd said to the BBC World Service even 4 years ago, you've got to get involved with podcasting, they would have said to you, not a chance. That's for small fry amateurs. Now look at them. Mm. They're spearheading this because they realize it's part of their survival. If they don't get involved with podcasts, they're not going to be there in 10 years. I think that's true.
And especially looking at the numbers in Africa, as you know,
absolutely,
people have more and more of an attention on the continent.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to check in with Sean Sanders just now. He's from Revix. Obviously, you know Sean if you've been listening to the show. And we're going to talk to him about cryptocurrencies and gold and everything else, because Revix obviously have all of that available on their platform, and he breaks it down for us and helps to explain what's going on in the market. So we'll talk to Sean in a minute. Hey, Damon, you're back.
I made it through. That was stressful.
Why? What was?
I really struggled to get back, eh? Gee whiz.
By the way, so you were talking about your podcast and how much you're looking forward to it, and you've done 2 episodes already. But do you think anyone can do a podcast?
Most definitely not, I'm afraid. But then not everyone can do radio. It's exactly the same. There's god awful things. People. I mean, we can talk about this forever, Gareth. People just don't understand. This is the golden rule. Pretend you're sitting at a coffee table and you're talking to one person, and just try and follow that golden rule. And most people don't get it. They welcome to my show, and I heard a podcast that the person even gives the time on a regular basis.
On a
podcast. It's now 10 past 1.
What and then for? 10,
it's now 20 past 1. I mean, you know, yeah. So you need experience. Get that book by Valerie Geller, that radio consultant. Doesn't she talk about it? Maybe, I don't know. You need to learn. You can't just do it. Am I wrong?
No, well, I think it's become a lot more, it's certainly the barrier to entry is low. I mean, like, anyone can start a podcast, but to have a successful one is very different.
Most definitely.
You know, it's easy for anybody to just decide they want to do a podcast and do it. And I'd encourage people, if you've really got a desire to do this, it's like you were saying earlier, it makes you happy to do your show. You love doing it. You think about it all the time. That's a good sign. One thing that I felt that Sharon and Jetty didn't mention is the fact that if you want to do a successful podcast, you either have to do something no one else is doing, or you have to do it better than them. You know,
yes,
that's
good
important,
one.
And I think you've got to love it. You've got to love doing the stuff that you do. I mean, you can't try and be like someone else. You must do the stuff you're the best at, and that's a great place to start. Hello, Sean Sanders, how are you, dude?
Yeah,
you're on mute.
Morning, guys. Yeah, very good. How are you doing?
There we go. You are there. It was a bit of a delay. No problem. No, you're not on mute. Okay, so Sean, I love this. Every week we come here, we go, what an incredible week on the crypto markets. And then you think maybe the next week will be boring, and then it gives you another surprise. So it has been volatile AF for the last couple of days. How are you guys feeling? What's going on in the markets? Tell us how you interpret all of this. What intel can you give us on what's been happening? Because it's back at $35,453 for a Bitcoin this morning.
Yeah, so Bitcoin's up about 4% this week. Ethereum's had a very big run. So Ethereum's up since October last year, 300%. Over the last 12 months, 700%. So there's been a huge run in Ethereum's price. Over the last 7 days, it's up 30%. So there's a lot of money moving into ETH, and it seems to be outperforming. ETH is the abbreviation for Ether's token.
Right.
So that's been doing pretty well. Gold has pulled back somewhat. It's down about 2.5%. Mm-hmm. And then you've seen our bundles perform really well. So you've seen our top 10 bundle up 22% over the last 7 days, our smart contract bundle up 15%, our payment bundle up 7% as well. So yeah, it's been a very good week in the world of crypto. But you said, right, the market's been moving up and down.
What's the position? Because one of the nice things about Revix is you can buy one of those bundles you've just mentioned now, or you can buy the USD coin, or you can get Pax Gold, which are very different offerings. How have they performed in the last few weeks?
So as I mentioned, so the top 10 bundles done very well. I mean, naturally, the crypto market's grown quite substantially over the last few months. So our top 10 bundle over the last year has increased about 320%. Our smart contract bundle has increased about 220%, and our payment bundle increased over 200% as well. So the crypto market's moved up. And remember, a few weeks ago, we were talking about the sort of dominance of Bitcoin relative to all the other cryptocurrencies. And it hit an all-time high, or near an all-time high, about 72% of the entire crypto market was, you know, sitting in Bitcoin's value.
Right.
And that's now changed somewhat. So you've seen altcoins, or all the cryptocurrencies that are, you know, in our bundles, which aren't Bitcoin, which have increased in value. And that's actually brought that dominance down to 67% today. So there's been a big move sort of into the alternative coins in the market.
Yeah, but USD and gold, I'm still asking about that.
Yeah, sorry. So USD has, I mean, the dollar's actually weakened over the last while.
Yeah.
So you've seen emerging market currencies sort of do a bit better. It's going to be interesting to sort of see what Biden does and whether his policies come through. So that'll dictate the direction of the dollar. And then generally speaking, if the dollar goes down, gold goes up. And if, you know, the dollar goes up, gold goes down. So those two sort of work inversely. So
yeah, this
you're
is,
going to just have to wait to feel those fronts.
This is largely what you guys mean when you talk about diversification, right? You want to own different kinds of assets. And these are all very, very different, just the three, crypto and gold and then the USD. But obviously, there are many others. How are the markets in general doing? How are the stock exchanges of the world performing at the moment? Because for some people, it's been an incredibly good year. I mean, we were talking last week, I asked you about the bubble with Tesla. But there are lots of other companies that have had a terrific 2020, despite the fact that it's been an extremely crazy and different year to any other year in recorded history.
Yeah, so markets are all-time highs across the board. I mean, you've even seen the JSE start doing quite well. I mean, when I say the JSE, I mean the JSE Top 40 Index.
Yeah.
So you started to see a lot of money move into stocks. And I guess this actually comes on the back of naturally a really bad economic period. But, you know, stock markets are generally forward-looking. So if you're looking at the next year or two and you're looking at economic recovery, I mean, probably quite a big economic recovery.
Right.
You're going to see stocks sort of outperform other asset classes. And there's, I guess, this irony, I suppose, with the economic recovery, which sounds really positive. And that is that it can actually wreck your portfolio. So when an economic recovery occurs, generally speaking, interest rates don't go down like what they've done.
Right.
So when interest rates go down, stocks become more valuable because future cash flows, which is how you value a stock, which is discounting future cash flows, all of a sudden a cash flow in 20 or 30 years becomes somewhat comparable to a cash flow that you're going to receive the next year.
Right.
And that difference is going to change quite a lot over time. I mean, with interest rates moving up, stocks are definitely going to be impacted. And that's where, you know, the likes of gold or Bitcoin become a lot more valuable because they're hard assets. Inflation erodes fiat currency. And I think this is something that, you know, we've really tried to make a point of over the last few years on the podcast, which is fiat currency is the worst thing to hold. Holding rands, holding dollars, holding euros, those are not investments.
Yeah.
You're guaranteed to lose money on a year-over-year basis. And you need to look at, you know, sort of having a small cash position. Don't get me wrong, we all still have to use cash, but, you know, own Bitcoin, own gold, own a stock portfolio and all the rest.
So it was quite cool the other day. Someone was asking me about, like, they've got, you know, a couple of hundred rand. They're not rolling in huge amounts of money. They get a couple of hundred rand to go and invest somewhere. And I told them about Revix. And so they went onto your website. And the coolest thing is if you look up Revix, it's this London-based company. It all sounds very, very cool and huge and like a big financial player, which you guys are. I mean, how has Revix grown over the last couple of years, Sean? Talk about yourself for a minute, because people like to have context for these things.
Yeah, so I mean, wow, the last while has been rather remarkable. I can tell you that now we've had some of our customer support team in tears over just the growth we've had over the last while. I mean, I'm not even joking. On a day-over-day basis, you've sort of had 2017 and then some occur in the crypto space. So a lot of people have moved in. A lot of people are kind of adopting it for the first time, which is just, you know, as a founder of the business, that's mm-hmm. the sort of thing you look for. So that's been really cool. In terms of, you know, looking for new investors, you know, looking to expand internationally. I mean, we are HQ is in the UK. We have offices in South Africa, but we're looking at Europe now as well. So our plan is to sort of expand across Europe and then to introduce the new investment products, hopefully pretty soon. So the new investment products are going to be focusing on theme-based products. So if you're looking at, let's say, AI or biotech or renewable energy or 5G, or, you know, all these emerging themes or sectors, and you're wanting to invest in them, medical cannabis would be another sort of area. And you just don't know how to get exposure to those things.
This is really interesting because these are such trendy and exciting and sexy subjects at the moment. People talk about them at dinner parties. People talk about, you know, renewable energy, biofuel, solar, all that kind of thing. But we don't know how to invest in those. And most people don't know what the company's names are that are behind these things. And you'd have to do a huge amount of research. Are you guys going to make it easy for us to just, like you have your bundles for payments, for example, you could buy into a renewable energy bundle. Is that what you're talking about?
That is exactly what we're going to be offering. So we're looking
Good.
And we just need to get over a few big regulatory hurdles. South Africa doesn't make things easy to sort of launch any new innovative fintech product.
No.
So we need to get over a few regulatory hurdles, but then we'll be releasing these products. But yeah, I mean, it's super exciting. If you think about just everything that's going on in the biotech space, everything that's going on in, you know, artificial intelligence at this moment, I mean, e-commerce, I mean, we're sort of seeing that, you know, grow in South Africa quite substantially over the last few years. Yeah. And those areas people relate to. I mean, you order things through some e-commerce platform. Why don't you invest in it? You're experiencing it. You know what the value is.
I love it. In a market that you've never seen before, don't guess, diversify. You can go to revix.com to find out more, R-E-V-I-X. You can follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Revix Invest. And Sean and his team will help you make your first investment. It doesn't have to be huge. You can put $500 in. You don't have to spend your life savings in order to be a fun and successful investor. You can try and start off with Revix. Go and check them out and tell your friends. Tell everybody else that you know. Get involved. It's a really cool thing to do. You can check on it every day. I mean, I log in every couple of days to see what's happening with my Revix assets, and it's just nice to see that you can experience the market and have some, you know, have a dog in the fight. You have some skin in the game. It's really fun. Thank you. Thanks so much, Sean. Always good to see you, dude.
Great, guys. Thanks so much.
Cool.
Have a good rest of the day. Talk to you soon.
Very good. There we go. There's Sean Saunders, Revix.com. Go and find out more by following them on social media. Damon, something really hideous happened during the conversation with Sean. In fact, Ntogozo says, Damon just showed us his gunt.
Damon.
No, you're on mute.
You're on mute. Sorry, I had to mute you and turn your camera off there.
Yeah. Did you turn it off?
I had to.
Thank God.
So behind, in front of me is the window with a curtain. I noticed that my picture is very dark.
Mm.
So I thought, let me lighten the room.
Mm.
And I got up to open the curtain, but I my shirt was covering everything, wasn't it?
No,
it was not.
Your gunt fell out.
Mm. But we call it the azamat.
The azamat, the gunt. You know what it is.
Oh, so was it exposed? Oh, my God. That's
hideous.
That's not
way
good.
Too much, yes.
Sorry about that.
Hmm.
Yeah. But at least I took the spoon. At least the spoon is out of my tea. I've learned that at least.
Have you seen that video that's been going around with the guy who takes a tomato, like a little cocktail tomato, and he goes, let me show you how you can wake your neighbors with just a cocktail tomato. And then he throws it at some Haagen-Dazs, and then they obviously, they get up and they fly off the roof. Then the whole neighborhood wakes up. So somebody, Steph says he just heard, or she, I think it's a he, Steph, says, I heard a Haagen-Dazs in the background. As an expat, I really miss that sound. Well, you can have all the Haagen-Dazs that you want. Come and get them. I hate them.
Can't we export them?
I'd love to export them, but who would want them, really? I mean,
with pleasure.
That noise, Jesus.
So is Haagen-Dazs only in South Africa? Or are they in other parts of the world?
I think they're,
I wonder, they're
a particularly African version, but there are ibises, the family they belong to. There are ibises all over the world. There are South American ibises. There are ibises in Asia. There are ibises in Europe.
They look prehistoric, okay? They are definitely, you can definitely see that they're the ancestor of some flying dinosaur creature, eh?
Well,
without a doubt, eh?
Garrett. You posted the scariest photo the other day on
your
Instagram.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a second.
Prehistoric creatures.
Yeah, let me just mention with regard to what Damon's doing. I mean, when I was in primary school, I was massively into birds, right?
You were an ornithologist.
I was an ornithologist. I had bird books. My brother is still into all that stuff. And I remember
Did you have binoculars?
So we've got four different ibises in South Africa. We've got Hadida ibises. Then there's the sacred ibis, which is the black and white one, which the ancient Egyptians used to worship. They thought that was a representation of their god Thoth, who was the god of wisdom. Oy. And I've actually got sacred ibises that come into, you know, so the area around my house as well. So there's sacred ibises, Hadida ibises, and then there's a bald ibis, which is really a beautiful bird. It's got this big red, like a thing on its head, and it's got a big red beak, and it's beautiful colors. If you look up a bald ibis, you'll see what I'm talking about. And then there's a little one called a glossy ibis too, which is a little bit more rare. So those are the four main species.
Do they all make the noise? Do they all make the same sound or not?
Sacred ibises, thank God, are quiet. And the other, they do have calls, but they're not noisy like Hardy does.
Gareth, would it be remiss of us not to mention that it's the presidential inauguration today in America?
Good
point.
Do we
not acknowledge that?
No, you're absolutely right. But they apparently are not going to be able to have any audience there. There's not going to be a big crowd of people to watch Joe Biden being sworn in. So I'm not sure how it's going to work.
Well, they've... the music comes
on. Yes,
he
has very
nice. That's the National Mall.
Yes,
at the National Mall in Washington, D.C., they have now put up flags which represent the crowds that would be there. I think there are 100,000 plus flags that they've put up.
Wow.
So they're calling it the Field of Flags to represent people who would have ordinarily been there.
Oh, wow. So it's going to look like a funeral, basically. I mean, don't they do that at the... at the National Cemetery at Arlington, they have a whole lot of flags in a field to represent all the dead people. Maybe that's...
I can't wait to see the photos that will go down in history. You know, you look at all of the great inaugurations. This will actually be a jarring image. We'll never forget this time.
Do you think Biden will then boast afterwards, I had the biggest crowd of flags?
Yeah. Hey? He's probably not
any inauguration.
No, I hope not. And listen, lots of people are very happy to see the back of Trump, but I saw a message here from somebody who still hasn't let go. I think it's Daryl. He says Daryl's just a massive Trump fan, and he says Trump will go down as the greatest president, blah blah blah. I don't agree, but you know.
Daryl, I think you must go on those that psychiatric medication that I'm considering.
Well, on a personal front, the thing that the inauguration is affecting for us is that we have no new episode of So What Now tonight.
Yeah, so the ENCA told us on Monday that we don't have to record an episode this week because they're taking the inauguration live. So... if you want to watch that, I suppose it'll be on ENCA. So, Sia, to go back to your point about that dinosaur, that prehistoric creature, so go onto my Instagram and you can see it's not the most recent, but two pictures ago. It's this thing called a terrestrial crocodile. Have you seen what this looks like, Damon? Look at this thing.
Oh wow! It looks like a character from Star Wars.
It's a very scary looking thing. It's like a 4x4 crocodile, actually. And apparently, these things existed. In fact, I mean, we've joked about this stuff with Gord before because he's also fascinated by these creatures. So one of my friends, she posted, "Oh my God, please! That is the most horrible thing in the world." So I said to her, "Can you imagine that coming down the mountain to eat you while you and your dogs were going for a walk?"
Gareth, you need to describe what it looks like. Everyone's watching the video.
Let me explain. Okay, so it's like a crocodile, but it's got long legs, and it walks like a dog. And it's still got a crocodile's head, but it's a slightly shorter head with just the same amount of power in the jaws and no tail.
But its actual body looks a lot thicker than a crocodile.
No, it's substantially apparently these things could run. Like you're like really fast. Whoa. They could run really, really.
So did you mention what was it called? What was it called again? What was it again?
A terrestrial crocodile. that
they didn't come up with a funny Latin name.
No,
okay.
Like a Paleolithic kind of crocodile. Apparently, like, really scary. Listen, if you go back in time, I mean, most of these animals are extinct now, thank God. You know, 99%, 99% of all the animals that have ever walked the earth are extinct. And among them are these. But if you go back in time and you look at something, there's a like a giant sea scorpion that's also not a very pleasant thing to look at. There were obviously those megalodon sharks, which were 10 times the size of the biggest shark that we have now. Very, very scary things. We must be pleased that our ancestors survived in a world populated by these monstrosities.
Well, I was wondering how many handbags could you have made out of one of those terrestrial crocodiles?
A lot.
A hell of a lot, eh? Mm. And the thing is, yeah, would Peter get involved? That is the question.
Yeah, because you see, you know, Peter are very picky about which animals they defend. They don't defend. No. They defend the cute, huggy, squeezy, fluffy.
If one of those terrestrial crocodiles attacked the main headquarters of Peter. They would not complain about the handbags, I can assure you.
You know, basically, in those times, everything was out to eat you or kill you.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
On land, yes. In the water, something flying in the sky. Imagine a crocodile-y situation with wings.
You didn't walk out of your cave to go to the cave next door to borrow sugar, put it that way.
No.
You didn't do that.
No, not unless you were really well-armed.
You weren't having sundowners at the edge of the cliff, you know, just casually.
That's a fair.
Yeah. By the way, I mean, Tracy's described this thing. If you're still trying to picture what it looks like, she's described it very well. She's listening to us now, and Tracy says it's like a crocodile crossed with a hyena. That's more or less it, but much, much bigger. It's like the size of a 4x4 vehicle.
Sure.
And it's definitely not a vegetarian.
Gareth, you're clever. You know history. What was the general lifespan of the early man? What do you call him?
Oh, you'd be lucky to have made it into your late 20s.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, most people died in childbirth. Most people died before they were even able to walk. I mean... If you turn
40, you were considered very old, right?
Hardly anyone turned 40, but most kids didn't even make it. You had to have 20 children because at least 15 of them would be eaten or killed or die of disease or their teeth or something, the infection.
Because they never wore the mask, they never washed their hands, and they didn't social distance. That's what, yes.
Yeah, but this is why. But this is why, like, if you're a true history student, and see, I know you had a question, we'll get back to it in a second, but if you're a true history student, like, you know, this pandemic is not the most threatening thing that's ever happened to our species.
I mean, but hang on, Gareth.
The Black Death, this is where... the Black Plague in Europe wiped out 2/3 of England's population. I think it was overall, it took out 2/5 of the whole of Europe's population.
Bring out your dead.
Right.
Bring out your dead.
I mean, you know, we lost people in war before this current century that we're living in now. We lost people in war at a rate that we couldn't even repopulate those areas. There's still some parts. Look at the Jews, Damon. I mean, the Jews, 6 million or more of your people were wiped out by the Nazis. The whole population of Jews in the world never recovered.
Yes, but we don't
recovered.
Yes, but we no. But Gareth, we don't gloss over it. We talk about it all the time. We make movies. There's books.
No.
There's Nazi trials. You know what?
I'm not saying I'm not saying we gloss over it. But a lot of people compare everything to the Holocaust. Apartheid's like the Holocaust. Coronavirus is like that. I've heard people say this. It's not. And what I'm saying is you need the context of history to help you understand these things. There are maybe 12 million Jews in the world right now. And the numbers before World War II were more than that. So it's never recovered.
Can I give you a classic example of how people just like are stupid? So somebody on Twitter, she takes a screenshot of an article in the Los Angeles Times.
Yeah.
The article in the Los Angeles Times was basically about because there's an increase in cremations in Los Angeles because of COVID-19, the municipal laws in terms of air pollution have been eased, which, dude, I can accept that. It's a terrible thing, but I can accept that. But then this person gets all dramatic and makes it seem like you're living next to Auschwitz in 1943. No, it's not as bad as that. But that is the, like somebody said, the tone was, we are having crushing amounts of cremation. No, there's an increase in cremations, but it's not apocalyptic. It's not great. It's not great, but it's not apocalyptic.
No, none of
this stuff. Stop it with the apocalyptic rhetoric.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, the trajectory of this story started going downwards as soon as you said someone on Twitter, because that limits everything. Yeah. That reduces everything.
Well, how, as Gareth alluded to earlier, how are we communicating these days?
Listen, I mean, if we go
communicating
back,
on Twitter,
if we go back in prehistory. I mean, can you imagine if we had Twitter back in the caves when those terrestrial crocodiles were wandering around? Or
at oomph. At grrr.
Imagine, like, guys, don't go outside. There's definitely a pterodactyl flying around. It just took Johnny's son, Seth. It just picked him up by his hair and we'll never see him again. But luckily they've got 15 other kids.
Good golly.
Listen, I mean, we're lucky we didn't live at the same time as the dinosaurs, right? In fact, we may not have had a human-like species around at the time of some of these creatures, because supposedly our species is only a couple of hundred thousand years old. Some of these creatures lived a couple of million years ago. Apparently, we are closer to the Tyrannosaurus in terms of the timeline than some of the early dinosaurs were to the Tyrannosaurus. In other words, the span of the dinosaurs' age from the Triassic to the Jurassic to the Cretaceous is longer than the time between when they went extinct and us. That's how long they ruled the Earth.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense, because think about it. Over time, in terms of being portrayed in movies, books, etc., your T-Rex, your Tyrannosaurus Rex, is the most commonly portrayed dinosaur. Yeah.
But there you go. But what I'm talking about is the timeline. So here's another one that'll screw your head up.
Is it's the most recent dinosaur, so there's more chance of finding the fossils.
No, it's not the most recent.
And it's just, I thought that's what you were saying.
No. I'm just speaking about the span of time.
I really need to concentrate.
So, all right. Do you think that Cleopatra, who was essentially the last pharaoh of Egypt, right, until
Elizabeth Taylor, yeah?
Because Cleopatra had the affair with Mark Antony and before that with Julius Caesar, and then Egypt was subsumed into ancient Rome by Augustus. So we're talking the year probably 10 BC, somewhere around there. Okay,
this is long before, Jesus.
2,000 and something years ago, all right?
Okay, yeah.
Cleopatra, last pharaoh of Egypt.
Yes.
You think that she, if she lived 2,000 years ago, do you think she is closer to us alive now than she was to when the pyramids were built? Or do you think that she lived at a time that where she was closer to the pyramids than to us? Does that make sense? In other words, is the span of time between us and Cleopatra greater than the span of time between Cleopatra and the pyramids?
Well, the thing is, I'm a bit ignorant where the pyramids made a long time before Cleopatra's lifetime.
This is what I'm about to tell you. So Cleopatra, the time that has elapsed between when the pyramids were built, even if you take standard Egyptology, Zahi Hawass, right? Pyramids are older than – so Cleopatra, at the time she was born, the pyramids had been there longer than we have been around and that we are now since Cleopatra.
Really?
Yeah. So in other words, right now we are closer to Cleopatra in years than she ever was to the pyramids being built.
So more than 2,000 odd years.
Correct. That's incredible. Now you think about that.
How old do they estimate the pyramids to be?
Well, I mean, there's varying theories about this, because a lot of people say the pyramids are much, much older than classical Egyptology says they are, but they're at least 7,000 to 8,000 years old. Possibly, according to people like, you know, Graham Hancock and Robert Bovall, and there are a lot of non-standard Egyptologists who say that those pyramids are perhaps 10, maybe even 15,000 years old. Just think about that. That's absolutely extraordinary.
Well, the most extraordinary part as well is for them to have built those pyramids, and certain structures within those pyramids cannot be made with today's modern technology.
Absolutely.
That's the part that blows my mind. So that's where I think aliens involved. It's just...
So just before...
I don't think I'm crazy.
No, you're not crazy. A lot of people are saying this. Just before we finish up this morning, because we've got like 2 minutes left, this is an incredible video that someone's just sent me now of troops marching through Washington. I mean, it looks like a military state. You know, this is what's going on in Washington.
Well, that's what
they
are. No, that's... The thing is, Garrett, this is the thing. When you look at something like that,
it's just a line of people in camo. You might as well be in Iraq.
You've got to ask yourself, this is what we come to. Are those soldiers the National Guard, or are they right-wing extremists? Because the right-wing extremists wear the same clothes.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? I mean, that's where we come to.
I don't know, but it's very scary. I don't like this.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But that's what we've come to, Gareth. But a little interesting story, about a dozen members of the National Guard have been taken off duty from today's inauguration because they had links to so-called right-wing extremist groups.
Oh, really?
How about that?
Sure.
So that means that each National Guard member has been analyzed and scrutinized by the FBI or the CIA. That's a lot of work.
Well, we're definitely going to have a different inauguration to any year before. The only thing that would make this one more exciting is if a terrestrial crocodile comes running in and like eats Kamala Harris.
Is Joe Biden? He's going to put his foot. He's going to put his hand on the good book, the Bible, and he's going to be looking over his shoulder. I mean, hey, I'll be nervous.
Listen to this.
After what happened, what happened at the Capitol building?
Tracy says something interesting. We're closer to the year 2050 right now than we are to 1990.
Right.
Tracy, why don't you write birthday cards? Thanks.
We're closer to the year 2050 now than we are to 1990. That's incredible.
I've lived over half my life. Let's be honest, I'm not going to make it to 100.
Not with your health.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, I have lost a bit of weight. Oh. I lost 900 grams in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. And you know how I did it?
Mm-hmm.
I started eating less.
Well, you see, that's been part of my diet for
I started eating less.
How long have I said that's the key?
It's amazing. You are a pioneer.
So listen, guys, enjoy having Damon on the show because... This might be, you know, one of the last times. You know, he's turning 50 this year. It's a TikTok.
Exactly.
Enjoy every minute with Damon. I mean, a lot of people
complain. I want to just ask a quick question. If I get COVID-19 and I'm lying, can I be on the show? You'd get a laugh out of it.
I would love
it. You'd love it.
Yeah, I would love
it. I will WhatsApp Sia. Sia, I've got it. The doctors say I'm dying. Let's.
Oh, definitely. No. We'll run a round the clock coverage, like, you know, when CNN are doing like the inauguration, or when Sky News do the coronation of the Queen.
That greasy guy did the press conference from ICU.
We will do a round the clock Damon coverage if you get COVID.
Sia, you look horrified, Sia, but the reality. This is the reality. If I get COVID-19. I'm a goner. I'm finished.
Yeah.
Because I nearly died from normal flu 2 years ago. So what are my chances?
No, so that, I mean, for ratings, that would be great because we've almost guaranteed the outcome that we want for maximum ratings.
And then you can say you knew somebody, not only who got COVID-19, but who died of COVID-19.
And I will dine out on that for years. I'll say, you know, we were so close, Damon and I. I'll write an obituary for you in the newspaper, Damon. Can you imagine? What do you want me to say?
Well,
In the Jewish report.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Damon, he was a bit of a mystery.
Mm.
You know, I didn't know what was going on in his head. Is he depressed? Is he not depressed?
Mm.
talented, but very bad diction.
Yeah. Misguided some of the time.
Misguided.
Yeah. But a good father. Do you want me to say good father and good husband?
Well, that's the thing. You can't say that. No.
The jury is still out.
I'm in therapy at the moment, and it turns out I'm not such a success. I'm not a very good person, it turns out.
But don't you always need something, a great metaphor or something picturesque, like the sun has shone, the sun has set on Damon's life, or his candle has blown out. You know, you need to end it off with that.
Do you want Sia to write something flowery like that about you if you die of COVID?
Mm. He passed away, but his body odor still remains.
Lingers.
On his pillow, on his bed.
Thanks to Perfume Garden Mania.
Yeah.
Thanks to Fragrance. Thanks to fragrancegardencollection.co.za.
So we could turn your death into one final ad for Bernice.
Yeah. Gareth, I noticed you've got a bookshelf behind you. Maybe a little photo of me on the bookshelf?
I could put a photo of you here. In fact, I do. I have a picture of all of us from...
The 5FM.
Yeah.
When we left 5FM, they gave us this framed picture of all of us.
No, I threw that away. I've got a picture of all of us when we went on that ship together. You want to see it? Hang on, let me find it.
Oh, please show it. Oh, come on, show it. What the hell? What the hell?
I'm processing so many things from the last couple of minutes.
What's the highlight, Sia?
Yeah, 5FM made a collage for us, remember, when we left.
I can't believe you threw that photo away, Gareth.
Huh?
Frames are expensive.
No,
Gareth, I can't believe you throw that photo away, because frames are very expensive.
Here's a picture of all of the crew at 5FM.
Okay, back a bit more.
All right, so here's CS, here's Mabali, here's Stefano. There's me, there's Leanne, there's Damon, there's Tabo.
Stefano was the crazy Italian cruise director.
Yes, correct.
Uh-huh. We got to contextualize. Yeah,
he worked for MSC, so he organized the whole thing. Anyway, it's a very nice picture. So there is one of you and Leanne and Mabali and CS and Tabo.
Gareth, you're very sentimental.
Well, yeah, about the things I care about, the things I don't.
Should I quickly show you the photo that 5FM gave us so people understand the context?
Oh, you still got yours. Quickly. Okay, yeah, sure.
That's right. I wanted to throw it away, but Bernie said don't, even though the frame is expensive.
Oh, some guns. Oh,
maybe we'll get to see some guns again just before the end of the show.
Wait, hang on. I want to put my headphones back on so I can really hear your reaction. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember why I threw it away. Total piece of shit.
I'm a bit, to be honest with you, I'm a bit embarrassed, because if we ever have visitors or guests, or Bernice often points it out, and it's embarrassing. Nobody cares. Not the people we meet.
I keep this stuff in my house, not for other people. I keep it for me. I don't care what other people think. I've got pictures of my family all over the place, and I've got, interesting things that have happened in my life, and I've got little things that nobody else would care about. But I don't care what other people think of it. If they're in my house, they should shut up and keep it to themselves, frankly.
You still have the sword on your wall that nearly killed you.
Yes. Yes, I've put it in a place where it won't kill me.
You were bending over and you went up, and the sword almost penetrated your brain.
Yeah.
Yo.
And I would have died there because I was living on my own.
That would have been a serious blow to the radio industry, Gareth.
I was living on my own in my flat, and I probably would have only been discovered when I wasn't there for the show the next day. You know? I could have died. Damon, you've gone on me.
And the smell.
The smell.
Sorry, did I go on mute? No, just lost signal.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a part about living by yourself, Gareth.
All right. Well, we ran out of time for this morning, but thank you, Damon. Always good to catch up with you. And that is a wrap for this morning. We will hopefully – listen, you're not planning to get COVID anytime soon, but if you do, you'll let us know.
I will. Okay. Watch this space.
All right. Very good.
No, Damon, don't say that. Jeez.
All right, everybody. Have a happy day. We will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. CliffCentral.com